Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
You know, what's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and back by popular demand, the goddess herself, the goddess of grain, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. What's up, Angie?
Oh, I just enjoying this nice, chilly fall Friday morning we've got going on out here in Iowa. So
yeah.
I'm being dragged kicking and screaming into the colder weather.
Yeah, well, we're going to go. It'd be nice to get a little cooler weather because, you know, we need to have a little bit of relief from all that hot stuff. But so hot stuff, goddess, what's the take on the grain world and what's happening in your mind? What do you think? What are you seeing here?
No, I'm just watching as we work our way through harvest. There's some interesting things happening in the cash market. So, you know, your futures and the spreads and stuff like that, of course, are slow to react. And I'm boots on the ground turning bushels into cash every day. And so there's some weird things happening for such a big crop. You know, as the USDA is predicting, we've seen some buyers really struggle with securing supplies. So, you know, in times of oversupply, you shouldn't have a hard time buying grain. So that's been real interesting to me. I've had a couple conversations with some big buyers here lately, and they may plan on paying a cheap price, and all of a sudden they're discovering that they're not getting the bushels in to cover their needs. So, you know, part of that could be that we've had a little bit slower harvest pace with the heavier rains and things like that throughout the Corn Belt. Part of it could be that farmers have went out and built a lot of extra space and done the things that they need to do in order to not have to deliver into the elevator, you know, at these really poor basis levels and things like that. So that's one thing I've been watching. You know, lately what's really been on my mind and what I'm really just been paying attention to, and I'm surprised, and maybe I'm putting too much emphasis on it, but I've been watching what's happening in Syria with Russia, simply because Russia is predicted to beat us in wheat exports and just have this massive crop of both corn and wheat. And, you know, in the background, we're seeing the UN discuss possibly, you know, making them complicit in war crimes. So it's really interesting to me from a geopolitical standpoint to kind of look at what would happen to the overall global supply and demand picture if Russia was no longer considered an active exporter. For the time being. Those are the two things in my mind right now.
Well,
nailed down local and then that huge global thought process.
So. Well, those are pretty good thoughts. But so let's talk about the USDA. You know, I think that they're another BS organization more like the Federal Reserve, because I didn't see the numbers they reported. You and I talked about that last time. I didn't see what they were talking about. I mean, I know there's some, you know, there's a couple, you know, I heard some the other day on, in fact, when your husband was on, when I thought you were tweeting for me, but you're really tweeting for him. I don't understand why, but, you know, I mean, that's not right. But I mean, I heard some guy go on and talk about how big it was, but, you know, I deal with a lot, and I know you do, and I haven't heard those bumper crop numbers that everybody says they're having. And then if you slow down the harvest, that even makes it worse. So, you know, is the number accurate in your mind, or is it maybe misstated a little bit?
I think it's the potential is there for it to be misstated. I'm really struggling with the USDA right now on the condition ratings and things like that. You know, this week they increased condition ratings, saying the soybean crop looks better this week than it had the week before. The soybean crop doesn't have any weeds left on it. I mean, it's ready to be harvested. It looks like hell, because that's what, you know, plants look like when it's time to harvest them. They're brown, they're ready to be ran, they're dry. You know, when the USDA comes out and increases condition ratings, and then all the analysts come out and say, oh, that's because, you know, they are getting yield reports back. And I'm like, that doesn't even make sense to me, because one should not be the other. That shouldn't matter. You know, condition ratings should be an arbitrary, you know, what does the crop look like kind of deal. And so I've seen a lot of different things out there. I've heard good soybean yields. People are talking about, oh, we've seen really good crops from a soybean standpoint. And in my neck of the woods in Michigan, we haven't had enough beans harvested to really say whether or not they look good, because as soon as the beans are ready to run, it rains. The same for Ohio. The same thing happened there. So from an overall standpoint, I think we're a long way from even knowing what we have. And just because the crop looks green and everyone thought it was real nice throughout the year doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to produce this huge yield that everyone's anticipating. So I don't know. For me, I'm waiting to see what happens. And like I said, the basis is the first indicator. So that's the difference, the cash difference, or the cash price that the farmer or the elevator receives, the difference between a cash price and futures is the basis, and that's your local function of supply and demand. To see that have to strengthen as you work your way through harvest is a very unusual thing. So I'm watching to see if the spreads start to strengthen. I'm anticipating soybean spreads, Novan to come in to just about even here, and right now it's at 6 cents carry. So if we start to see those spreads come in, the basis is strong, that should indicate that futures should rally, because the supply either is tucked away in the hands of farmers, or it's just not there. And to me, I do not think the corn crop is there. Everyone keeps telling me how big the corn crop should be, but I'm not seeing it.
I'm not seeing it either. And of course, and if there are farmers listening to me, if they can afford it, if they're not paying more than we think we can sell it for later, of course, the store, if they can store it on their own without any cost, then I would store it. I would never get rid of it here.
Yeah.
But of course, if you have to pay for it, then you have to think about it differently, because you have to weigh the cost and of how much it costs, how much it costs to store. But so what are you seeing cash price? Because I have my opinion on basis is a little bit different than everybody else. So I'm going to go that through. What are you seeing on some of the cash prices?
I'm seeing where people are getting nervous. Cash price wise, we're seeing some firming up. I sold yesterday to a hog feeder who needs some seed at a 6-over basis, versus the ethanol plants right now are trying to pay a 30-under. But the ethanol plants aren't getting anything bought. We've had a really weird switch in years in the eastern Corn Belt, because we saw that carry reintroduced in the red wheat market. So now an elevator can hold a bushel of red wheat for 6 months and make 40 cents. So, of course, he's going to fill up all the space that he can with red wheat and be happy. So we saw a lot of corn move in September, and that kind of deflated basis in the short term. But now these guys are going into harvest, and they don't have the bushels bought. And they had anticipated this huge crop to come into them, and they're not seeing it come. And part of that, like I said, is because we have had some delays with rain, and harvest really hasn't gotten rolling too heavy, because it's been a drug-out process. But part of that, like I said, is I have a lot of farmers in my territory that have increased their grain handling. They're going to hold it. They're going to pay. The bins are relatively, steel's been relatively cheap. Bin builders are available now because it's slowed up a little bit there for a short period of time. And interest rates are cheap. So they're going out and taking loans in order to cover their cost on these bins and building extra space. And the USDA, I don't think, can keep up with the rate of space that's being built, and everyone anticipates all of this grain has to come to the pipeline, and it doesn't really necessarily. And with soybean costs or soybean prices as high as what they are, guys have been moving beans to the market to get cash flow going, and you still haven't seen that basis fall apart. It's been interesting to watch.
Well, I will say this: I don't believe in the USDA to begin with. I don't think it's there. And I think the rain's only helping it. But I think what happens often in all markets is you're getting a little bit of a squeeze. And I think that the cash buyers decided that they were going to try to muscle out the owners. And I think that, at some point there's a meeting of the minds. And I think that if the farmers can hold on, I think they'll win this battle, because there's a lot of things going on, which we'll talk about when we come back from the break. But this is Angie Setzer, the goddess of grains, the one herself, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. We're going to step out here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the show every day. We'll be back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're coming back with Angie right after the break. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess herself, the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizen Elevator. All right, Angie. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and my opinions are as follows. A, I'm not a big believer in the basis and the cash versus the future, because to me, if I own the right to sell something at, let's say, well, corner, let's say I own the right to sell it at 350 and the cash is 320, I'll just exercise my options or my futures and take the 350. Okay, so to me, my basis is whichever is better. If my futures basis is higher, I can take my money from my futures. If my cash basis is better, I can cover my futures and sell on the market. Is that flawed, or where is that right or wrong?
Oh, it's, I mean, you're right in the sense of how you're sitting. If the farmer, the problem that we have is that the farmer needs to move product most of the time, or the process that you're talking about on selling the futures and doing things of that nature. It may not match up with what he has to move eventually. And that's the hardest part, is eventually you have to move the grain to market, or you have to keep building space. And we've seen that before. You know, if there isn't quality concerns and a guy is playing properly with paper, he'll continue to add on to his storage facility and do his thing that way. Unfortunately, like I said, most guys out there, they are very limited in the types of trades they put out, and so they end up having to bring it to market. Now, your elevators, on the other hand, your big commercials out there, totally different story. I mean, they can do a lot of things to make the market move. I mean, all you have to do is look at what benefits the Andersons or ADM or any of these wheat handling groups when you look at the BSR. And so there's a lot of things out there that are made to help the big player. It just isn't any other facet of our economy, it seems. But there are a lot of rules or regulations or open processes to help the big player that don't necessarily benefit the little guy.
Screw the little guy, and let's make the big guy richer and screw everybody. That's what they're trying to do. It happens in every single... look, it's a fact. In every single market... You know, the destruction of the banking system, which we know that farmers depend on the banks, right? I mean, they need, you know, what would you say, if you know, and I don't know the number exactly, but a small farm at the beginning of the year to get ready to plant and to do everything they need, all the costs they have coming in, what would you say they need to borrow to get started in the beginning of any calendar year, any marketing year?
Anywhere from, I mean, you'll have guys anywhere from 500,000 up to several million, depending on how much they're going to plant and what kind of production costs and things of that nature they have. I mean, that's, and how they're sitting cash flow wise, but there's millions of dollars invested by many farmers before they even turn a wheel.
Right.
Planting a crop.
That's my point. So now you've got these, the little banks, the old community banks, which is mostly the farmers deal with, and they're under so many heavy restrictions and so many heavy laws that it's very hard for them to work with farmers the way that they used to work with them, which is basically a handshake. You know, hey, Angie, I need $1 million to get started. Okay, no problem. Here's $1 million, right? I mean, you know, we know we got the land, we got the collateral, so there's no problem. But now with all these stupid laws, and with the imbecilic Fed that we have to deal with, it has changed a lot of dynamics. And what people don't realize is that a farmer, before he has dollar one in his pocket, is already in the hole, let's say $1 million. And and they're borrowing money. But the problem today is that the farmers get squeezed by the bank, because the bank, you know, the regulations come down and the bank goes, well, hell, we got to get you out. So we're going to force you to liquidate, right? And now forced liquidation, and the big guys know that they're being under heavy pressure for forced liquidation. So they're going to sit back and wait and not be in a hurry to buy and try to steal the whole man's bundles, I like to call it. What do you say?
Oh, I agree. I think you see it. I mean, it just isn't anything else out there. You could start to look at the Big Short and the housing, the different packages put together in order for guys to bet on or against the housing market that's out there and things of that nature. I mean, it really... When it comes down to it, and we talked about it the last time I was on, in some ways you'll have banks that'll come out and they'll lend more than what a guy can afford to pay back. And then in the other breath, you have banks that they just flat out can't anymore. The relationship is gone. And in some ways, there are guys that have put themselves into some pretty shitty positions, you know, pardon lack of a better term, but it's not a bad position. It's a shitty one. And because when you have to make decisions between whether or not you can continue to function in business, because your bank is coming to you and calling that loan due or something of that nature, it gets rough. And so, you know, not to mention the other thing that we've seen is with the mergers of banks. You know, the small banks can barely afford to stay in business anymore. So you've got mergers of banks and guys that have worked for years and years and years with a banking group that no longer exists, now trying to discover where they can go. You know, of course, we've got our farm credit services out there and things like that that have been helpful, but they're really limiting the amount of money they'll put out because they know that there are risks associated with lending guys millions of dollars going into a growing season that no one can guarantee what the price outlook is.
Right, but the farmers typically own their land, most of them, and they've mm-hmm. got enough assets to back these up. And that, see, that becomes, in my mind, the bigger problem is that you have people that have no idea what the farming world is about, lending them money mm-hmm. and then squeezing them and saying, well, hey, you got to sell now because we want to make sure we get our money back. And you and I both know that is never the right thing. I mean, you're a hedger, mm-hmm. you're involved in it. And unfortunately, I think one of the problems is most farmers don't understand the proper way to hedge or protect their product either. What do you think?
Or even if the farmer does, the farmer may know what he needs to do. The banker may not have the ability to understand it. I would venture that 90% of bankers out there or ag lenders out there have no real concept on how a margin call works. I mean, we are not very far separated from 2008 when you had big, giant banks that were threatening to pull the plug on the lines of credit to elevators because of margin calls. When the corn market rallied and everyone owned a bunch of $2, $3 corn, you know, and they're margining it as the market moves towards $6, then all of a sudden your bank calls you and says, hey, we can't keep sending you money to send margin to Chicago. And you try to explain to them that it's to cover lower priced corn purchased a year ago or something of that nature, and they still threaten to blow you out of a position. You know, it's really interesting to see that there are people in positions of power or people in positions of making decisions that have no true understanding of how the market works or functions or how an actual hedger works to cover his crop.
I told you to stop talking bad about the Fed again. I mean, come on. Because they certainly don't understand how a market works. That is for sure. I mean, yeah. You know, I mean, markets are are built on a supply-demand model. And this is what I think has been the most tragic things that we've seen over the years is that we've gotten away from the true meaning of a supply-demand model mm-hmm. and a price discovery model, and more of the prices are being determined by idiots that don't have any mm-hmm. idea what they are, and I think that becomes a bigger problem. What say you?
Oh, I agree. That's the old more money than brains philosophy out there. I think we've seen that in every aspect. And you know, it goes back, and it almost has to go both ways in the sense that you know, floor prices and things of that nature first, and then when supply gets too tight for the demand that we have and the market's trying to cure the problem, you know, next thing you know, the USDA comes out and finds 300 million bushel of extra corn in a stocks report or something of that nature. You know, so it is, we've seen price manipulation, even in the guise of supply and demand, in my opinion, for many years now, to where it's almost gotten, you know, it's just like we saw in this last report, the USDA came out, changed their production number for last year's soybean crop. We've seen them come in and change carryout numbers several years after the fact and do different things like that. When you have the ability to change what the actual supply or demand number is out there from many years ago with the stroke of a pen, you have a little bit too much control over what's actually happening versus the market actually discovering it in a true sense of supply and demand discovery.
And isn't that the truth of it? See, and that's the funny thing, because the government does it all the time with their reports. I mean, you know, they'll come out with a report today, and next month or 6 months from now, they'll change that report. And that doesn't do anybody any good. And what it really does is it takes away the ability for the market to decide the proper price, because the proper price is simply, and I'll explain that when we come back from the break, about the proper price. This is the Bubba Show. We are with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Citizen Grains, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator, excuse me. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horwitz. Go to libertytalk.fm and download the podcast every day and the Sporting Edge on the weekends. We'll be right back after the break with more from Angie Setzer. Todd Bubba Horwitz will be right back.
He's so delicious.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horwitz with the goddess herself, Angie Setzer, Vice President of Grains at Citizens Elevator. So we're talking about prices, Gary, and simply what it is, in the way that the markets work, the way that the markets are most efficient is I got something to sell, you got something to buy, and what we got to do is we got to find out where are we going to exchange wealth at, where's the best price. And Angie, it's funny because I know you have your first baby and obviously an infant. But, you know, when they start going to school, you know, kids learn price discovery first by, you know, you bring your lunch to school and you got a pudding and someone's got a jelly you want to trade. They trade. That's price discovery. It's trading something of value for something of value. And for some reason, the government, the banks, and everybody else don't think that we are capable of determining what the right price is supposed to be. What do you say to that?
Oh, I agree. I think it goes back to the whole sucker born every minute idea, you know, the idea of there's a sucker born every minute and watching them getting taken advantage of or something of any, and all of a sudden the government decided that they needed to step in and make sure that they protected those people who were quote unquote getting taken advantage of, when the reality is that if you're willing to sell something for less than what it's worth, then that's, you know, you made your bed lie in it. If you're willing to pay more than something is worth because you aren't willing to discover what the true price is out there or see what's available to you, then that you should live with the consequences of that. The government has decided that, you know, the playing field they believe is uneven, and which it is, but that's life. I mean, the playing field's been uneven since the dinosaurs. You know, it's really how things are supposed to work. But the government's decided to come in and become the great equalizer, and we don't need a great equalizer. Because in my opinion, that's not the way it's supposed to go. If you're truly looking at a free market, it's a free market. It's not something that is manipulated to help Sally avoid hurt feelings. But as time has gone on and more and more feelings have been hurt, so to speak, here we are. And next thing you know, the people that are benefiting from an actual true way of discovering price or working within the market, are suddenly chastised for that because you're not supposed to work in the negotiating fashion, or it's mind-blowing to see just how quickly you can see something that is benefiting one group suddenly be taken out because it's quote-unquote not fair. I don't know when we decided that life should be fair, and I guess all is fair in love, war, and economics, in my opinion, but the government has a different opinion on that.
Well, because the government, if they allow free markets and price discovery to take over, that takes away, that really knocks out the Fed in their manipulating of currency, which makes the government not being able to print money at will, basically, even though the Fed is not a government institution. They do work together and they do print money at will, but the real markets are designed to be exchanging something of wealth for something else of wealth. So if you got corn and I got cash and we trade, you and I decide what that price is going to be and nobody else. We don't need the help of anybody else to help us decide what the right price is going to be. And that is where, you know, we talk about these banks and, you know, we've had some real struggles in the livestock markets. And what you've seen happening, and I think part of the problem has been, is the banks have been calling in a lot of loans and they're really sticking it to the farmers. Even the farmers that are hedged, that you can show them, like when I do a hedge for somebody, I can show anybody what the absolute worst possible price I can get out at is. And that's above the loan value, but yet the banks force them to liquidate. Well, what happens when that goes on is the big firms know that the banks are forcing liquidation, so they're going to sit back in that bid. And they're going to wait and make them dump into a bad market, which only creates a worse market and all the way around. What do you think?
Oh, I agree completely. And that it goes back to the discussion on people not truly, or bankers not truly understanding how hedging works. And so that, I mean, when it comes down to it, that's what you've got is if they're forcing guys to liquidate because they can't understand what the hedge is in place for, and like I said, when you have a bunch of cheap corn bought or in the market rallies, or you have a bunch of high-priced livestock sold and the market drops, all of a sudden your margin calls are there and these banks get scared. They don't understand that a margin call is there to maintain a good position, so to speak. And I agree completely. When it comes down to it, that's the hardest part for anyone in the business is trying to figure out. We have too many people that believe they're experts and are afraid to ask questions or learn on things. And that's one of the biggest issues we have with the banking and the lending industry is that they think they know because they took an economics class in college at one point in time. So obviously they understand agribusiness when the reality is they wouldn't understand a hedge if it bit them in the ass.
Listen, even the guys who go to agribusiness school don't have, I mean, you've seen, excuse me, you've seen some of the classes they offer. Now look, it's a good base knowledge. But there is no knowledge like actually understanding how it really works when you're out in the market, like for example, doing what you're doing, putting together and understanding where every price is at, every bid and every offer, so you understand exactly what's going on in the market. Is that not correct?
Well, I have an English degree. I didn't go to school for economics. I didn't go to school for anything of that nature. It's just to me, supply and demand fundamentals make sense. They're easy to see, the psychology of the market and things like that. And that's part of the reason I enjoy being a cash trader so much is, you know, even right now you're hearing guys tell you what the market should be because of what the USDA is telling them. Well, what the market should be and what the market actually is two very different things. And so right now we're working our way through price discovery with grains because we don't really know what the harvest is going to bring. And so you've got that going for you in that sense. That's part of the reason I enjoy my job so much is that I am on the ground trying to find true price discovery. And the futures market may not actually show what's out there, but I get to see, you know, what the market's willing to pay and what the market's willing to sell for. You know, we had a conversation yesterday. I have a livestock feeder that wants to buy corn. He needs to. He's out of corn. He needs to get through the next week. Well, what he wants to pay and what the farmer who has corn right now, because not many farmers have corn left going into harvest, you know, what he wants to sell it for are two very different things. So we have to decide which one is going to give it up. And I can guarantee you it's the guy that has livestock to feed that's going to have to be doing the giving, because the guy that's holding the corn really doesn't care if he sells it or not right now. He was planning on holding it into harvest anyway. So it's interesting. It's just another one of those things where there are certain levels of price discovery, but when you're talking price discovery on, you know, out of the newspaper articles you read or the things of that nature, that's kind of a BS form of price discovery overall, because it's a manipulated way. I mean, the just isn't anything else. The headlines you read, the reports put out, things of that nature, they're put together to benefit the one group. And when you're down in the bottom in the trenches, you know, cash livestock or anything like that, that's when you truly see what people are willing to pay versus what people are willing to sell for.
And that's what we have to understand. And that goes for every market. And this is where I get upset and confused in the business world, Angie, is, you know, interest rates. Interest rates are also a price discovery mechanism. And because if I'm willing to lend at 2% and you're willing to borrow at 2%, then we can make a trade. If I'm willing to lend at 10 and you're not willing to pay 10, we can either negotiate our rate and come to it. But that's where I don't think that's where a lot of our problems, from the business industry to the farming industry to everything that goes on in this country right now, is because the people that are in power refuse. Now, I think some of them understand the model. I mean, you know, understanding the price discovery is not that difficult, but being willing to let it work without manipulating it, I think that's the problem. And we have to get away from somehow having somebody decide what's worth, because what they're really doing is they're making it worth what it's worth so that they can justify either creating more money, keeping interest rates lower to protect the big banks, which I think is a total farce. What do you think?
Oh, I agree. And I think you could take it a step further, that those in power right now know exactly what they're doing in a sense, in order to have their friends and cronies and lobbyists and, you know, Jim Bob Joe Fred, who does whatever out there. I mean, they are benefiting. You can't tell me that they don't, you know, in a certain form, and maybe there's some good guys left out there that aren't, but those that are writing laws and policies and doing these things are doing it in a way to help continue to benefit, even if it's not the big guy, it's the guy that they know. I mean, we're scratching each other's backs. And you could get into the whole government corruption topic, and we could talk until the cows come home. You know, are we going to see the corn price rally in October because we don't want to see crop insurance payouts like we would be expecting if beef corn was at $3.20 versus the insurance price of $3.89? Wouldn't be the least bit surprised if we weren't, you know, by the time that crop insurance prices were set, we didn't see December corn back into the $3.80 mark. You know, so there's a lot of things that happen from a manipulation standpoint in order to either avoid payouts or get payouts to come in. And you know, in my opinion, if you think that there aren't people in the know that are benefiting from this, I think it's cute. You know, you've got blinders on. Because I think it's a lot of this policy and a lot of these things are done in order to let those with connections continue to fleece those without connections.
Oh, I don't disagree with that. I think that your talent straight up, that again, we know that, you know, money is made usually at the troubles of others. And when you allow these markets and you allow people to involve themselves in A, what they have no idea of what's going on, but in B, trying to manipulate or financially engineer any market, that is never a healthy sign, because financial engineering can only create a much bigger problem coming down the road. And I think that is where we got to find out how we're going to figure this out. And when we come back from the break, Angie's going to give us all the answers, because she knows everything, because she is the goddess Demeter, the Greek goddess of grains. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download the podcast every day, as well as check out bubbatrading.com. We've got a lot of great hedging programs for equities as well as farmers. We're going to step by here for a break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, will be right back with more from the goddess herself, the Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the goddess Demeter herself, the goddess of grains, Angie Setzer, vice president of grains at Citizens Elevator. All right, Angie, so we've got obviously some real problems in the world. We've got, you know, the hog markets are getting slaughtered, although they're coming up a little better. Cattle's been extremely weak. Grains are pretty much in the tank. What is your outlook from your perspective of the grain markets, the livestock markets, and then I guess the overall economy? Because you kind of tie into that all when you look at what you do for a living.
Yeah, a grain market side of things, I really think we trade sideways aside from, like I was just talking about with crop insurance deal. I would not be the least bit surprised to see both markets, soybeans and corn, perhaps gravitate towards the spring insurance price that was set, $3.89 in beef corn and $8.80-something in November soybeans. So that could be bad for soybean producers going forward, and it'll be done on the backs of high yield reports, yada, yada, yada. And we really will trade without direction probably until the January quarterly stocks report comes out, and we get a good feel for what actually is out there crop size-wise. I'm interested in monitoring, like I said early on, the geopolitical situation in grains, because I think you pull Russia out, and then if you have some issues with Russia in the UN, then suddenly you're going to introduce some, you know, potential issues with China, too. So we could see a double-edged sword in that. That's really something that I think will continue to develop. The livestock side of things, you know, I really don't see, unfortunately, a big reason that cattle prices need to go up too much. We obviously have more cattle on feed than we've seen before. Than we had last year, and the thing that's real interesting about the cattle on feed report is it doesn't necessarily count all of the cattle out there. It's somewhat of an arbitrary number, and B, they only survey cattle feedlots with more than 1,000 heads. All you have to do is drive around the countryside to see the bulk of cattle on feed anymore, or cattle being fed by farmers, are, you know, 100 head or less out there. And so not counting them, I think, could have a big impact on supply or just the continued supply availability as we move ahead. Hogs, I'm interested, you know, the last time that we had a severe shortage in feed availability in 2012, we saw a significant cut to our livestock, our poultry, our pork, our cattle, and Brazil has flat out run out of feed and been out of feed for the last two quarters. They're going to start importing some U.S. corn here after harvest gets wrapped up. And so I think that's something, because Brazil's been a big competitor of ours when it comes to pork exports to China. And, you know, there have been issues with us being able to export pork to China, but if China gets hungry, you know, there's been some talk floated that perhaps they'll look to import more meat than they'll look to try to produce the meat, just because they seem to struggle with production anyway. You know, so there's a lot of things that could develop in the hog industry, I think, that could turn us to the upside here. Especially now everyone's talking about how it has to continue to go lower. And that tends to be one of my indicators that, you know, they have to turn
around.
The
masses are always, actually, I think we're in pretty good shape everywhere. Again, I look at it from a different model. You know, I'm not a farmer. Yeah. I'm a trader. And I look at it from as a value play. But now, somebody asked us about Russia and exporting and importing and things like that. I mean, do we need them, or can we do without them? I mean, you know, it's like in oil. Oil, we don't need anybody, and that's why I'm surprised that oil is so high right now, because it's all a bunch of BS, because it doesn't mean anything, because we have enough of our oil right here. So do we need to have the connection with Russia and China, or is there enough demand for it in this country where we don't really need the outside?
We need the outside when it comes down to it. For soybeans especially, we need the outside, because the exports in soybeans are half of the demand base. So we definitely need the outside market interest on that side. But Russia isn't involved in soybeans anyway, so they really wouldn't matter too much. On the corn side right now, with the carryout that we have and the quote-unquote burdensome stocks per the USDA, if Russia were to step back, especially in the wheat market, because we've seen, you know, the continuous idea that we have a bunch of wheat in the global pipeline, we have record global wheat stocks, and Russia is supposed to be producing a 70-some million metric ton crop this year. If they aren't able to export that crop like everyone's anticipating, that creates a hole that would be open for U.S. It would open it up for U.S. business, which would help kind of deplete some of our domestic stocks. And if Russia steps back in, yeah, they'll still have the supply. They'll say that, well, they'll be back in a year or two and they'll have all those supplies. Sure, but by that point in time, we've depleted our domestic stocks, and we'll need them to step into the global market to kind of supplement that pipeline, perhaps. But that'll at least help encourage higher prices in the short term if they're out of the market. So, you know, we rely on exports pretty heavily for soybeans and wheat, and at this point in time, we'll need to continue to rely on exports pretty heavily for corn, just because we have such a big projected carryout. But, you know, a year and a half or even just a year of Russia being out of the game could change the whole face of U.S. supply and demand fundamentals as we see it.
Okay, so now how do you foresee, you know, one of the things that happens in the farming community, in the farming world all the time is, of course, one's a big crop and the money's at, so they everybody rotates over. But when everybody rotates over, it just it diminishes one and really pumps up the others. Mm-hmm. So would you, if let's say we were everybody's going to plant beans next year, okay? Would you say, hey, I'm going to plant corn because everybody else is planting beans. I'm going to stay in the corn market. I mean, I just, you know, I'm not a farmer, so I don't know all that stuff. So I'm asking you, what do you think?
Yeah, oh, I always tell my guys to zig when everyone else is zagging. At the very least, if they're planning on increasing bean production for next year, we're hedging those beans at this point in time, just because I do anticipate with the price dynamics the way they are that you could see a significant increase in bean acres next year. I'm telling my guys to keep planting wheat. You know, the discussion out there right now is farmers will cut back their wheat acres 10 to 20% from a year ago, which is fine. But I'm going to tell you, those guys that stay in that market structure are going to be glad they did, because the market will strengthen due to the cutback in supply, and it'll benefit them. Then, of course, as price rises, then everyone will jump back into wheat production because their neighbor made money on it this year. And next thing you know, we're back to where we are right now. I mean, that's how we ended up in this situation, and it took about 8 years to do so. You know, 07, 08, we saw wheat trade up. Chicago wheat was 12, 13, 14 bucks or whatever.
That was the key of the market, by the way. By the way, just a quick note for you. That was what told me that the top of the stock market was in. When wheat hit $14 in January of 2000, was it 8 or 7?
Yep.
Whatever it was.
8, I believe, yeah.
When it spiked up, you knew that they were getting squeezed, and that was the end of the, that was the end of the day, and that was going to signal that there was a lot more trouble coming. So do you see trouble for the farmers in near term, or do you see them muddling through until things turn better?
The majority of guys, I think, will muddle through until things turn better. The guys that got done with 2012-13 with $7 corn and $14, $15 soybeans and $8 wheat and still weren't penciling in a decent profit, you know, because they were basically spending themselves into oblivion, they may not be able to handle another year of this, let alone two. And that's the struggle that you have is that the commodity market trades in such cycles, but that's why is because it has to clean out the weak links on both sides. So you see the market trade to obscene highs and go in directions you never thought before. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, you see your demand sectors or your sources of demand start to shrink because they can't afford to stay in the marketplace with the price as high as what it is. And then slowly your demand disappears and your supply continues to increase due to the high prices. And next thing you know, we're at low prices and we have to do it all over again. So the guys that couldn't, you know, really pencil a solid profit or didn't necessarily lock away their equity when the prices were high, you know, really probably without something drastic happening over the next 6 to 8 months may not be here for next year because you are going to see banks pulling credit. You know, there are guys out there that are 2-3 years in arrears now that they're probably not going to get the necessary financing to plant again. Or they'll plant, but they'll plant in a way that's almost indentured servitude in the sense that everything that they plant is already quote-unquote sold because they owe so-and-so money. But I think long-term-wise, the guys that are smart and are pocketing their equity and aren't spending too much in that sense will be around for the long haul, and they'll grow. They'll benefit from some of these sell-offs. And, you know, it would be beneficial to us to see prices stay somewhat lower in the short term because then it'll help kind of kick our global competitors out too.
All right, and this is our own indentured servant, Angie Setzer, the Gaza Greens. Thanks, Angie. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bob Arts. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station, the Bubba Show. Todd Bob Arts. Have a great day, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk Event.